from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. It's the second day of a Turkish military offensive in the Kurdish-held parts of northern Syria, and there are reports of several civilian deaths and tens of thousands of people fleeing their homes. The action began after the U.S. withdrew troops from the area. The Trump administration's move has been criticized by some of his allies as a betrayal of the U.S.-backed Kurds. Then at 10:30, as the House plans next moves in its impeachment inquiry, two associates of Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, were arrested this morning on campaign finance charges. We'll discuss the latest, and we'll hear from South Bay Congressman Ro Khanna, who's a member of the House Oversight Committee. That's all next. Join us after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Turkey launched a major cross-border assault on Kurdish-led militia in northeastern Syria yesterday, ostensibly to create a safe zone to protect Syrian refugees. We're going to get the latest on the conflict, which has deep historical roots, and hear how the U.S. fits into it. And joining us is Carlotta Gall, Turkey Bureau Chief of the New York Times. We welcome you to the program, Carlotta Gall.
Thank you.
Good to have you, and also good to have BBC diplomatic correspondent Paul Adams with us as well. And Paul Adams, thank you for joining us. Good to have you.
Yeah, good to be with you.
Carlotta Gall, I'm going to begin with you. Let's just get, you're on the ground there. Where have you been today, and actually, what have you seen on the ground and on the end of the air?
Yeah, we were actually right in the thick of it today. We were on the border of the Turkish-Syrian border at a place called Akçakkale. And it's right across from the town of Tel Abyad, which is clearly one of the targets for the Turkish military. So they were advancing overnight. We knew there was shelling yesterday and overnight. And then this morning, there was still more artillery going in. And then suddenly we heard some very, very loud bangs very close. And that was the Kurdish militia from the other side targeting the Turkish town where we were. And that precipitated some very sad injuries and deaths, unfortunately. And then we heard massive salvos from the Turkish side back into Syria. And as we left this evening, the whole horizon is burning with black smoke from multiple fires in the Syrian town of Tel Abyad. So very dramatic uptick of the conflict. It's clearly not gone all the way that Turkey expected. So they got this shock retaliation in their own Turkish town with some civilian casualties. And so then they're hitting back very hard. And it's clear because they hit so hard, it's clear they haven't occupied that town yet. So I think it's a sign that this could get very difficult for both sides.
It could get worse and be exacerbated. And I'm reading about seven civilian deaths and about over 60,000 Syrians in Kurdish-held territory fleeing from the border since Wednesday.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing on the other side, people fleeing. I mean, in fact, the small salvo that came our way also caused the whole of the town of Akçakale. Everyone was piling into their cars and leaving. A lot of Syrians who just live there anyway because they're refugees, and then all the Turkish townspeople too. A lot of ambulances rushing people out from the main hospital in that town to the town further back in Turkey. So they were obviously overwhelmed with the casualties as well. So quite dramatic. And then this evening we got delayed because a huge convoy of military hardware was moving into place in one of the bases on the border. So the Turks are obviously doubling down and preparing for more.
Again, we have Carlotta Gall with us. She's Turkey Bureau Chief for the New York Times, author of The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001 to 2014, and BBC diplomatic correspondent Paul Adams is with us as well. And Paul Adams, at this point, I suppose it's fairly easy to say that this may not have occurred if it hadn't been for that phone call between President Trump and Prime Minister Erdogan.
Well, look, I mean, this is something that President Erdogan had been itching to do for months and months and months. He probably thought he had a green light more than once in the past. But the presence of a small number of American troops in that border area working alongside, until less than a week ago, working alongside Turkish forces was acting as a kind of tripwire, preventing the Turks from going in and conducting this large-scale operation. Clearly, President Erdogan regards what happened last Sunday as constituting a green light, something the administration has been keen to dismiss all week. But judging by the reaction from all sorts of people, not least the president's own Republican allies in Congress, they clearly believe that this was a green light and that everything that has happened this week came as a direct result of that.
Well, Secretary of State Pompeo has said the U.S. does not approve of this Turkey offensive. He said they may have legitimate security concerns. In fact, the irony of this is we have one ally, at least a NATO ally, against another ally that helped us against the Islamic State. But at this point, one has to ask the question, when President Trump particularly says the Kurds didn't help us in World War II, and this is just a tribal war that's been going on for so many years, if the United States is not really giving sanction to this. And I say that in spite of the fact that President Trump talked about economic threats to Turkey if they went too far.
Well, it has been interesting to see how the messaging has evolved over the course of the week since that statement late on Sunday night. I mean, frankly, it's all over the place. But I think you can see in the statements over the last couple of days, and in particular today with Donald Trump talking about hitting Turkey hard with sanctions, that he is stung by this criticism from Congress, particularly from people like Lindsey Graham, who is leading an effort to draw up a package of sanctions that would include asset freezes on President Erdogan and other top officials, visa restrictions and so forth. And so in the course of just a few days, President Trump has gone from merely saying that the U.S. would not support or be involved in an operation to saying that if Turkey somehow strays off limits or doesn't play by the rules, there will be consequences. The trouble is, of course, we don't know what the limits or the rules are. There is perhaps some clarification from the Turkish side in a statement from the foreign minister just today, who has said that the Turks do not intend to go further than 30 kilometres into northeastern Syria. That would take them down to this motorway, the M4, which cuts across northern Syria. But, you know, at the moment, with tens of thousands of civilians on the move and reports coming through of casualties and the kinds of episodes that Carlotta was just describing, this is a situation that could very easily get out of control very quickly.
It is also easy to say, because I think it's true, that President Erdogan would like to essentially wipe out the Kurdish militia because he sees them as terrorists.
Yeah, look, this is the overarching element of President Erdogan's strategy. This is the third time that he has sent Turkish forces into northern Syria, and each time the objective has been largely the same, and that is to deal with the YPG, the Syrian Kurdish militia, who he sees as entirely synonymous with the PKK, the Turkish Kurdish guerrilla organization, which he and pretty much everyone in the West regards as a terrorist organization. He sees no distinction between those two groups, and he wants to make sure that the Syrian Kurdish YPG is nowhere near the border, and ideally he'd like to get rid of them altogether, and that has driven his policy in northern Syria for the past 3 or 4 years.
If you have questions about this ongoing situation and crisis, we would like to hear from you. We're talking to Paul Adams, who is BBC diplomatic correspondent, and Carlotta Gall is with us, Turkey bureau chief with the New York Times. You can be with us as well, and you can call us at our toll-free number with any questions or comments. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, you can get in touch with us by phone at 866-733-6786 or on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. And let me go back to you, Carlotta Gall, if I can. What's happening in the refugee camps? Have you seen any of those?
There are refugee camps here where, in fact, interestingly, and there's villages and villages where people are living and renting apartments and working in the cotton fields and so on. There's almost on every street you'll meet a Syrian family. They are actually interestingly pro-Turkey on this, I think, because they feel the nationalism in the Turkish, the mood in the media, the mood on the streets. There's loudspeakers, you know, blaring martial music and instructing everyone to stay indoors and so on. So they're picking up on that, but they also do say, we want Turkey to move in, clear the place of terrorists, and then we can go home. So they are perhaps parroting the government line, but I think they also do feel they just want someone to take charge, and so they can actually have a peaceful town to go back to. And a lot of them don't like the YPG, which is the Kurdish militia, and a lot of them don't like, even more don't like, the regime or the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. So they actually do here support the Turkish move. Of course, now, today, they've got very upset when they see the shelling and they're wondering about casualties. So it's, you know, it's a very mixed emotional scene down here.
And I'm going to read a comment from a listener who says this is totally wrong and a total betrayal of the Kurdish people, who for the last two decades have been successfully and effectively fighting the terrorists in Syria and Iraq, and who also for over a century were denied their rights to their own homeland. Let me go to you on this, Paul Adams. I'd like to get your sense of the response we're hearing, not only diplomatic responses from Europe and how they might differ from the UK, but also from, for example, Israel, which has been a close ally of the United States and now sees an ally essentially being left in the cold here to the Turkish forces.
Yeah, I mean, this narrative of betrayal is one that is very widely shared. You know, for the last 4 years, the Kurds, the YPG fighters, have been the main fighting force in the battle against Islamic State. You know, we're at the point at which the West frankly gave up on the notion of unseating President Assad and became obsessed instead with the battle against so-called Islamic State, it turned to those fighters. I was at the Turkish border, not far from where Carlotta is, at a place called Kobane back in 2014, when that was a place that was close to being overrun by Islamic State, and only thanks to US airstrikes was that town ultimately saved. And that's where the relationship was forged between these Kurdish fighters and the United States. And that is a relationship that has flourished ever since and has led to this successful operation to more or less destroy the entire caliphate. It hasn't removed IS as a threat entirely, but it certainly removed the caliphate. And so there is this sense widely held across the region that these people who fought so bravely and died in large numbers for us are now being betrayed in this way. I think there are others who would take a long view of...
Can I jump in here, though? Sorry. I do. Ahead, I think we should jump in here because there are a lot of Arabs, Syrian Arabs, who would disagree with that. They say this militia, sure, they fought hard with the American help against ISIS, but they've also tried to impose their own rule on a wide area of what is, you know, many majority Arab towns. And so there's a lot of refugees in Turkey who say they cannot go home because this Kurdish militia is ruling the roost and doing forced conscription and so on. So, I mean, I've talked to people today who will say they will go back home across the border if the Kurdish militia is no longer in power. So there is an element, certainly here, that I think Turkey, of course, is listening to because they've got all these refugees and they want them to go home.
It's an important element, Carlotta, and I'm glad you brought it into the mix here. It just shows again how labyrinthine and confusing and multidimensional this whole problem is. But the fact that civilians are being killed now and that, well, there may be indeed a lot of IS and Islamic State warriors set loose and a resurgence of ISIS is weighing certainly on the minds of many Americans, Lindsey Graham particularly, as Paul Adams mentioned. But let me bring our callers into this and let me begin. Callers have many questions and comments they want to make. Anne, I'm going to begin with you. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for bringing this up today. My husband and I last night were actually up for an hour in the middle of the night because I woke up thinking about this. I was a Navy nurse with the Marines out in a tent hospital in the first Gulf War, and I am feeling like it's August 2nd, August 3rd in 1990 when we had that crucial thing where we went into Iraq the first time. I looked up the Kurdish consulate in the phone number in San Francisco. I'm going to call them. I have the Five Calls app. I'm going to call all my representatives. This And this guy needs to be impeached and removed from office immediately. And dumpster, I call him. And then the other thing is that I went into Wikipedia to look up the Kurds, you know, and there were two treaties after World War II that were, there was the first one was supposed to give them their own homeland. It would have stopped a lot of the violence that they are fighting against and the discrimination against them. And it is just, this cannot stand. And I am vehemently opposed to it. And it is, and I think if there's any proof that Russia is taking on a coup with Trump in office, I think this is it.
All right, Ann, I appreciate your comment, and I thank you for the call. I want to get another caller on right away, though, and that's Kevin. Kevin, join us.
Yeah, thank you. I share the sense of betrayal that the U.S., in removing its troops, have betrayed our allies. But can you reassure me that there is no case that the YPG is supporting the PKK in Turkey?
That's a fair question. Let me go to you, Paul Adams.
Look, I think there is a case. They are certainly ideological bedfellows, and Turkey
and Kurdish nationalists, certainly, right?
They're Kurdish nationalists, and you know the problem with the Kurds is that they are a stateless people living in four countries, and all of those four countries—Syria, Iraq, Turkey, and Iran—all regard Kurdish aspirations with grave misgivings because it threatens their, you know, their identity. Carlotta's absolutely right. There are no saints in this story, and where the Kurds have taken ground, often Sunni Arabs have paid the price. And I think that is something that's important to remember at a time when there is all this talk of betrayal going on. But the Kurds are, if you like, the perpetual victims. They are the people who, at the end of the day, are always going to be on the receiving end of bad news. They're never going to get their national aspirations met properly. And this kind of betrayal, the situation that we're seeing unfolding in northeastern Syria, frankly, was always going to happen at the point at which the Kurds stopped being really useful to the United States.
Carlotta Gall, let me go to you.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the huge mistake was to have used them and boosted them so much, which was a Pentagon official, you know, decision. It was very much a practical military decision on the ground. And they weren't thinking diplomatically beyond that. And so now you've got the betrayal. I totally see it that way. But it should really never have got to this pass at the time. And Turkey's security and strategic considerations, you know, should have been worked out long ago. And so this is the trouble when you have someone like Erdogan. He's got tired of waiting. And he's also a bit politically vulnerable. So a good war is something he's going to go for. So it's been a very dangerous situation, but a lot of us have seen it coming for months, and so that's what's very distressing.
In fact, there are some assessments that it would have happened regardless of that phone call with President Trump. But I'm looking at a comment here from a listener, which also I think brings up an important question. A listener writes, why isn't NATO stepping in to negotiate, or Germany or France or the UK? Turkey has been our ally since 1945 and a NATO ally since 1952. We fought alongside the Kurds, who are our friends in consequence. But when the U.S. is caught in the middle of an ally and some friends, what do we do? And the question also brings up the fact, and I'll go to you, Paul Adams, that the U.N. Security Council is actually discussing this offensive today, but President Erdogan has threatened Europe if it calls his offensive an invasion.
Yeah, I mean, President Erdogan's rhetoric, which is somewhat Trumpian at times, has been very much deployed today. He's made those threats about unleashing waves of Syrian refugees into Europe before, and Europe has kind of learned to live with them. As far as the United Nations Security Council is concerned, I would say expectations are below zero. We will hear a lot of hand-wringing and concerns about the safety of civilians and so forth, but there will be no meeting of minds there, and I would be surprised if there's even much of a statement at the end of the meeting. NATO, well, the NATO boss, Jens Stoltenberg, is actually going to Turkey tomorrow. He will meet President Erdogan. It was a scheduled meeting, lots for them to talk about. NATO is an Turkey is an important NATO ally, but if clearly this operation will be top of the agenda. Does NATO have the power to persuade President Erdogan to back off? I very much doubt it.
Well, the caller raises the question, though, about other allies of ours getting involved in this, although President Trump has perhaps created some distance with our allies in Europe and elsewhere, that is, allies who aren't run by autocrats. I'm wondering about the fact that French President Emmanuel Macron just today said that the Turkish offensive, quote, risks helping ISIS rebuild its caliphate. What do you think about that argument, Carlotta Gall?
Certainly, I think that's the great fear. No one knows quite how much the Kurdish militias will now concentrate all their men and their forces and their strength on resisting the Turkish advance, and in which case will they take all their guards off the prisons and turn their backs on controlling that, because they've got tens of thousands of camp followers as well as several thousand ISIS people in prison. So that, I think, is a great worry, and Turkey has said some strange things that they will take charge. But actually, when you look at the map and where these camps are, there's no way that would happen quickly. So I think that is a very serious concern for all of. And we know, you know, some of them are Europeans, some of them are Syrians, but some of them are from many foreign countries, and including Europe. So they could, if they get loose, they can start making their way to cause some real damage elsewhere. So there is a huge concern there, and Turkey says they're aware of it, but when you look at the logistics of that, I don't think they can actually seal or prevent some mass security breakout, because they're miles. They're up on the border, and the camps are miles down. So I think that is a very serious concern.
And there are some who believe that President Erdogan may even have some sympathy toward the Islamic State. He certainly is more disposed toward, well, enmity against the Kurds. I'm looking at a couple of comments here that I want to read. This is a listener who says, let's kick Turkey out of NATO and see how they like the Russians as their best friends. And Ross writes, is anyone asking yet what President Trump received from Erdogan or Putin for abandoning the Kurds to Turkish forces? How does Russia benefit from the U.S. exiting? Very good question and a pointed one. And I got seconds left here, but Paul Adams, your thoughts. Russia and Iran will benefit most from this, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. The thought of the United States leaving the Middle East will be something that would cause nothing but delight for President Putin. So, yeah, bring it on, I think, is probably his view. And Iran, likewise, has its own interests in Syria, linked to its wider regional ambitions, its links to Hezbollah in Lebanon and so forth. So removing one international player from the mix certainly serves their interests too.
Final word from you, Carlotta Gall.
I couldn't agree more. But Turkey, I think, would actually like the states to stay, but further down country, because they actually still do need a NATO partner in the mix.
Carlotta Gall of New York Times, Paul Adams of BBC, thank you both so much for being with us this morning on the Forum program. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And when we return, we're going to talk about the White House stonewalling and public support for impeachment growing. Stay tuned. That's up ahead. Congressman Ro Khanna will be joining us, and so will White House reporter Ann Guerin. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.